It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Good night. And the seats be getting even better. They don't call Super Tuesday for nothing. Folks, it's still early, but things are looking awful, awful good. For those who've been knocked down, counted out, left behind, this is your campaign. Just a few days ago, the press and the pundits had declared the campaign dead. And then came South Carolina, and they had something to say about it. And we're told, well, when he got to Super Tuesday, it'd be over. Well, it may be over for the other guy. Tell that to the folks in Virginia, North Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Minnesota, and maybe even Massachusetts. It's too close to call. We're still waiting for Texas and California, a few other small states to come in. But it's looking good. So I'm here to report, we are very much alive.
Sandy Rios with you. They're very happy.
Make no mistake about it.
Joe Biden last night claiming victory, and indeed it was a big victory for him last night. He won 9 states. He mentioned most of them just now, but Texas did indeed come into his column. Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, you know, just dropped out the day before. That's her home state. Alabama, Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Massachusetts. Elizabeth Warren came in 3rd in her own state, which was, I'm sure, pretty embarrassing. Bernie Sanders, by contrast, got 4 states, but he got the biggie, and that's California. He got Colorado, Utah, Vermont, and California, 415 delegates. So where does that leave us with delegates? It's a little uncertain because delegates are parceled out according to party rules. Like if you get 15% in certain states, you get some delegates. So it looks as though at this point, Joe Biden has 453 delegates, Bernie Sanders, 382, Elizabeth Warren, 50, and Michael Bloomberg, 44. Now, funny, this is really pathetic. Last night, the only win that Michael Bloomberg had after spending, somebody I heard, I know it was over 500 million, but I've been told that he spent $1 billion on this race so far. $1 billion. He worked in American Samoa, which has, I don't know, 7 delegates. They have 7 staffers. He hired, meaning Michael Bloomberg hired 7 staffers. And guess how many people voted in American Samoa? 175 people voted. And Michael Bloomberg, you know, spent tons of money there. It is his one win last night. I thought this little clip with Brian Williams weighing in at the end was pretty amusing. Let's listen to clip 4.
Beautiful state. I know you're not used to seeing a New Yorker in southern Florida in late winter. But unlike the president, I didn't come here to golf. Or to reveal classified information to Mar-a-Lago members. I came here because winning in November starts with Florida. And if I'm the nominee, let me make you this promise. We will beat Donald Trump here in Florida and swing states around the country. Yeah. Now, tonight, the polls are still open in a number of Super Tuesday states. And as the results come in, here's what is clear. No matter how many delegates we win tonight, we have done something no one else thought was possible. In just 3 months, we've gone from 1% of the polls.
It is 8:30 Eastern time, and you'll note we're just bringing this in from the side because we only have 1% in, and in Arkansas, the result is too early to call. Please note Biden with 59% of that 1%, Bloomberg with 22% of the 1%. We'll go back and listen to Mike Bloomberg, who is, fair to say, not having the night he thought he paid for, not having the night he was hoping for.
Bloomberg, who is not having the night he thought he paid for. I guess not. He won American Samoa. Then listen to this again. He hired 7 staffers for American Samoa, and 175 people voted yesterday. And so he now has won American Samoa. That's his only win. It's really amazing, isn't it? But they say he's like the 3rd richest man in the country. He's got billions, I think 45 billion, something like that. So I guess what's a billion between 45 billion? All right, so just some practical things that caught my eye. I don't think Maine has been called yet. At least it hadn't when I was prepping this morning. Again, Elizabeth Warren came in 3rd in Massachusetts, which just got to be very, very embarrassing to her. The Boston Globe actually endorsed her. So it's pretty amazing that she only came in 3rd. And the fact that Joe Biden won Minnesota was pretty amazing. He didn't actually spend any time or money in hardly any other state besides South Carolina, certainly not in California and not in Texas either. But Beto O'Rourke's endorsement of him earlier in the week, I think it was Sunday afternoon, when he said he was going to put Beto O'Rourke in charge of his gun, you know, the gun policies of his administration, which, of course, is really terrible news for people who believe in the Second Amendment. But that's what Joe was bragging about. He won Virginia by a huge margin. I have a lot of stats to share with you here. I think I picked out some that I think you'll find very interesting. Most voters that voted yesterday in the Super Tuesday primaries in those various states said that they made their decision just within the last few days. Now, that's pretty amazing, I think. And so it probably is attributable to a couple of dropouts by Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. So now the thing is there are lots of states left, as you well know, and a lot of the northern states that would probably go for Bernie Sanders have not been counted yet. So it's, you know, I don't know. I don't have a magic wand, and I do not have a crystal ball, thank goodness, because I'm not into crystal balls. I'm into actually God, the best crystal ball of all through his scripture. So I don't know what's going to happen there. But there are lots of primaries to follow, and I'll give you the dates on those if I have a chance today. I will do that. By the way, in Texas, there was a huge turnout. Biden, at the last polling I saw, was at 33.6%. Sanders at 30%. Now, that's not far from the polls because they had said that there was 2 points between them. So Michael Bloomberg has had 14.7. Now, if he gets up to 15, that means he will get some of Texas's delegates, and that's considerable. So I don't know what he's going to do. Some think he's going to drop out today. Others say, no, he's going to stay in for that brokered convention. So I really don't know. All right, so half the voters in Texas polled were late deciders. The fast-growing subset in Texas, of course, is Latinos. And Bernie Sanders played to them, but that didn't cause him to lose to win the state. In California, the Democrats were polled about what things are most important to them. And again, Bernie Sanders carried California. Healthcare by 32%, climate change 26%. Now, again, this is California. Economy and jobs 18%. Immigration only 6%. Gun policy only 5%. Foreign policy 4%. So that just shows you that's California Democrats. Those are the things important to them. 32% healthcare, 26% climate change. California Republicans or Democrats were asked a question about who they plan to vote for in 2020, and 77% said they definitely will vote for a Democrat. These are Democrat voters. 25% of Democrats said it depends on the candidate, which is very interesting. And then 89% favor in a different question how much candidates can spend on their election, and rightfully so, because Tom Steyer and Bloomberg has spent so much money. But it's, as I did predict this to you, that money would not buy a presidential race. I just, not yet. It just can't buy it. There are too many variables, and you don't have enough money. You'll spend yourself into oblivion. So California voters weighed in that way. I would say on that 25%, saying it depends on the candidate, Bernie Sanders carry California. And I, listen, I do not think the Democrats can at all take for granted that Bernie Sanders voters are going to vote for their nominee. I don't think so. I think that's going to hurt them, too. That's the other. I'll talk with Liz Scheld about that in just a second when she joins us. All right, so Tennessee, you know, there was a terrible tornado last night or two nights ago in Nashville, Tennessee. East Nashville is really reeling from that. And so the polls were opened later because of that. There are dozens of people still missing, and I think there's, I think I read, I shouldn't say, let's just say maybe close to it, a couple of dozen who have been killed in that tornado. And then in North Carolina, Biden won 42.8% to Bernie Sanders 24.1%. So it's amazing. I think the whole notion of socialism and communism has really awakened Democratic voters. Another interesting statistic, more Republican early voters have turned out all over the country than Democrats. I think that's interesting. More Republican early voters have turned out all over the country. In North Carolina, the black vote went to Biden by 56%, 20% to Sanders, 12% to Bloomberg, and 6% to Warren. So another interesting set of statistics. We talked yesterday about who was on the presidential ballot, and it varies from state to state. And some of you called in and said, gosh, there were a lot of candidates. When I went in to vote in the Republican primary, there were lots of candidates besides President Trump. And again, it varies from state to state. But in Texas, I do have a copy here. Governor Weld from Maine, I think, is challenging the president, as was Joe Walsh, who dropped out, but his name's still there. From Chicago area, De La Fuente, Eli, Mattern, and Istvan. Those are the other choices in Texas. And I'm sure when you go vote for your own state, you'll see a series of other candidates running in the Republican, who got themselves on the ballot in various states. So that is the result of that. There were 1,357 pledged delegates up for grabs on Tuesday, and a candidate has to earn 1,991. Now, this is the Democrats, in order to secure the nomination ahead of the convention. And I want to tell you about Alabama. Yesterday was the primary for the Senate race. Jeff Sessions came in at 31.15%. Tuberville, the former coach of the gosh, you're going to hate me for not knowing. I know. I can't talk about sports or dogs. The former coach. I better not. Auburn? Yeah. Okay. Came in at 32.24. So Tuberville, 32.24, Sessions, 31.15. They will be in the runoff race, which will take place March 31st. Bradley Byrne, who gave up his congressional seat, he was the establishment pick. He gave up his seat to run. He came in at 26.76%, so he's just out. He's not going to be in Congress, and he's not going to be in the Senate either. That opens, from my perspective, that opens up that seat to somebody conservative. So Alabamians, get somebody good in that seat. Judge Roy Moore came in fourth at 6.98%. That's very sad to me. It's very sad to me, I have to say. That just is so unjust what happened to him in Alabama. So now that March 31st first runoff takes place there, on those 10 ballot initiatives in Texas that someone called in yesterday telling us about, I have the results of those in my hand, and I don't see anything about transgenderism or anything like that. It looked like all like monetary things, like voting whether to have a state income tax. And I don't know, there are propositions, and I think most all of them passed. Yeah, all of them passed. So I'm not going to go into the weeds of that because we are a national show, and those of you not from Texas don't care about those kind of initiatives. But I think we would have been very concerned about something that applied to transgenderism in schools. If you guys have information on that that I'm missing, I'll feel free to call and maybe explain it to Adam while I go on and introduce our next guest, who is an expert in all things election, and she'll join us, Liz Scheld.
Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman here with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Well, I told you it was going to happen. We sold out of our Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour in June. That's the bad news. The good news is we still have seats available for our September tour of our nation's capital in Mount Vernon. And again, this is from a spiritual heritage perspective. Stephen McDowell, the Providence Foundation, is our historian, and he goes with us. So you're going to learn so much history, so much of our Christian heritage from Stephen as he shares all along the way as we see all the sites of our nation's capital. We also have a Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown tour, which runs back-to-back with the Washington, D.C. tour. And we still have seats for that in June and certainly in September if you want to go on that trip as well. So go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com for all the information.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Paul Kicker, administrator of the USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service. His office helps protect the public's health by ensuring the safety of our country's food. Psalm 82:4 reminds us of the importance of protecting one another. Rescue the weak and the needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Paul Kicker as he works to ensure the safety of food products in this country. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
A group of boys at Marshall Middle School in Virginia say they were told to remove their Make America Great Again ball caps. Last week, the school held a fundraiser. Anyone who donated a dollar to the cause was allowed to wear a hat to class. So 14-year-old Logan Teague and his friends decided to wear their MAGA hats. But at lunchtime, school administrators had a change of heart. They said the hats were causing a disruption. There were unconfirmed allegations that Latino students were bullied. However, school leaders say no one was punished. They did make every student remove their hats, though. Joe Teague says his son bullied no one. He wore his hat in support of the president, and he believes as a result his son was targeted. I've covered far too many of these stories, pro-Trump kids under attack on school campuses. I believe those boys, and I believe they were targeted simply because they wanted to make America great again. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
It's a good night. It's a good night. They don't call Super Tuesday for nothing. Just a few days ago, the best of the pundits had declared the campaign dead. I'm here to report we are very much alive.
When we began this race for the presidency, everybody said it couldn't be done. But tonight, I tell you with absolute confidence, we're going to win the Democratic nomination. And we are going to defeat the most dangerous president in the history of this country.
No matter how many delegates we win tonight, we have done something no one else thought was possible. In just 3 months, we've gone from 1% of the polls to being a contender for the Democratic nomination for president.
My name is Elizabeth Warren, and I'm the woman who's going to beat Donald Trump. I'm in this race because I believe I will make the best president of the United States.
You don't get
what you don't fight for. I am in this fight.
There are four candidates remaining in the race. Like,
Yeah, hello.
We're still here, guys. We're still here.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was the opening for Fox and Friends this morning, and I thought it was worth borrowing because it was a great overview of what happened last night. That was Tulsi Gabbard, the forgotten candidate, in that last little bit. I've already told you about the results. I will repeat that Joe Biden won 9 states, Alabama, Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, Massachusetts, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Texas, and Minnesota. Bernie Sanders won Colorado, Vermont, Utah, and California. All right, there's a lot more to say. We've been saying it, but I wanted Liz Schell to join us this morning because Liz is she's a pollster. She's not a political consultant, but she watches these things very carefully. She's a senior editor for American Greatness and founder of Red Revolver Strategies. And Liz, I guess the first question is, what about last night surprised you the most?
I think the biggest surprise was, good morning and thank you for having me. As always, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Liz.
My biggest surprise was that Biden won Texas. And
yeah.
We were told that it was going to be Sanders was going to win in Texas. So I was surprised about that. And I think I was surprised secondarily just that Biden did so much better than we were led to believe by the media. So I was definitely surprised.
You know, me too. Really, I actually shocked. I surely did not see that coming, especially when you see the breakdown of how little money and resources he spent on the states that he actually won. And that reminds me of something. I'm sure you saw this yesterday, Liz, but Donna Brazile, who is the former DNC chairman, very close to the Clintons, is now a Fox News contributor for some strange reason, the one who handed Hillary Clinton the debate questions during the debate ahead of time. Anyway, she got really upset yesterday at the RNC chair, McDaniel.
Sorry,
I just went blank. So let's listen to this. I really want to know what you think was going on there, because I think it ties into what we're just talking about. So here's Donna Brazile yesterday.
We had Ronna McDaniel on, Donna, earlier on the program, chairwoman of the RNC, and she was talking about the possibility of a brokered convention, the impact that would have on Bernie Sanders. Here's Ronna.
It does depend on how big the lead that Sanders takes out of California is, if he picks up a huge proportion of delegates. But I don't see anybody getting out soon, and it's leading towards potentially a brokered convention, which will be rigged against Bernie if those superdelegates have their way on that second vote.
To that, you say what, Donna?
First of all, I want to talk to my Republicans. First of all, stay the out of our race. Stay the out of our race. I get sick and tired, Ed and Sandra, of listening to Republicans tell me and the Democrats about our process. First of all, they don't have a process. They're canceling primaries. They have winner-take-all. They don't have the kind of democracy that we see on the Democratic side. And for people to use Russian talking points to sow division among Americans, that is stupid. So, Ronna, go to This
oh,
is
wow.
not about... No, go to I'm tired of it, Ed. We're not trying to prevent anyone from becoming the nominee. If you have the delegates and win, you will win. This notion that somehow or another Democrats are out there trying to put hurdles or roadblocks before one candidate, that's stupid. I know what's going on. They are scared of Democrats coming together to defeat Donald Trump. They need to be focusing on what we're focusing on, the Democratic Party, and that is preventing foreign interference in our elections. Stop using Russian talking points, Madam Chairwoman. Period.
You know what? She goes on, but it's pretty amazing how she exploded. Also, just as a sidebar, I can't believe Fox is allowed. She was on again last night. She should have been fired for that. So she's telling Ronna McDaniel, who just calmly is analyzing a race, to go to you know where several times in that clip. What's behind that from your perspective, Liz? Why do you think that hit such a nerve with her?
Well, honestly, what else is she going to say? Look, I mean, because what Ronna McDaniel said was correct. I don't think anyone who understands the process the Democrats use to put out a nominee would say it's a democratic process. It's not. And so I think that it's a sore spot in the party. And it's really the root of a lot of the discord that the Democrat Party is going to experience down the line in their process, which is that if Bernie is ahead in the delegate count or very close to Joe Biden, and you have a second round of voting where all of the elite people decide, make a decision that, and these are people who are superdelegates, they have greater weight in casting votes for the nominee, and they give it to Joe Biden, they are going to have a problem. Bernie has enough of a following to really create a problem and maybe even like split the party with a lot of the young people that populate his movement. So, I mean, I'm not excusing her behavior, but I think it's a sore spot with them because they know that it's unfair, and Bernie said the process was unfair in 2016. These are people already raw from back then when they felt like they were not given a fair shake. And so now we're bringing it up. Now, you know, it's just silly to say this is Russian talking points. I mean, I don't know. I guess they say everything out of a Republican's mouth is Russian talking points now. I don't see that. But, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a sensitive issue that they are aware with and that they're aware of. And I think it really has the party in a bad spot. I don't see how they come out unscathed from this nomination process.
Yeah,
I don't
either. I was just saying, I was looking at a stat from California, and it said that 25% of Democrats who voted said 25% would vote for the Democrat depending on the candidate. So I wondered about that, Liz. I mean, there's a lot of ways you could see that, but I found myself, since Bernie covered Cary, California, I wondered if that is not a quantitative percentage to say, I'm reading into this now, that Bernie Sanders voters are not going to vote for another candidate. Are they going to vote for Joe Biden?
They are. I don't think you have two kinds of people that are engaged in this nomination, the voters, right? You have people that are desperate. They'll just vote for anyone to get rid of Trump. That's all they care about, you know, because they've been brainwashed and lied to for 4 years by our media. And then you have the people that are basically in a cult and, like, love Bernie Sanders. The people that are in the Bernie Sanders cult, they're not going to switch to Joe Biden. Those are people who are diehard Bernie fans. So what percentage of his support are those people? Well, we don't really know. But if in California, which is probably, let's be honest, it's higher in California because California is kind of a nutty place, but 25% of their voters are going to take a hike, that they're done, that they're finished. But also, even if they do switch to Biden, let's say they do switch and they're like, fine, we just have to get rid of Trump, maybe that's their camp, the optics on that will not be forgotten the next time. It's not a good look to think that the process is unfair for the Democrats. And I think it is weird. It is unfair. I prefer a winner, a very straightforward winner take all. We count the votes. Whoever has the most wins. You know, I think that's a better way of doing it. Even if you don't like the results, which we just went through in 2016 with Trump. The establishment couldn't stop Trump. They couldn't. He just had the support. There was nothing they could do. But the Democrats have fail safes in there, like their superdelegates and their process of getting percentages of the delegates that are allocated. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not excusing her language, but what else is she going to do? They really want to shut that down, that narrative down, that it's unfair and that they're playing favorites. Because we know from the WikiLeaks email that we saw, from Podesta's email, that they did have their thumb on the scale for Hillary Clinton. So people who are paying attention have not forgotten this.
You know, it's funny, last night when Donna was on later, Katie Pavlik mentioned that what they had done to Sanders in 2016, and Donna said, that's a lie, that's a lie. Well, of course, we know it is not a lie.
Not a lie.
But it's just an amazing, I want to share something silly with you. This is silly, but actually my husband was looking at Parade Magazine from the Sunday paper. Just this morning, he handed this to me. It's got this, okay, my point is going to be this before I tell you what it says, that the media is doing a full court press for Joe Biden. There's no question about it. That's part of the reason why I think he did as well as he did last night. So even down to, in Parade Magazine, Jill Biden's Parmesan Chicken. That was the one that came out on Sunday.
Great.
Now, silly as that sounds, that's not an accident. And then you alluded to this, Liz. This really stunned me, to be honest. I guess there is some innocence left in me somewhere. Sanders, Biden, Bloomberg have paid a combined $466,000 to superdelegates.
Yeah.
That was in the Daily Caller this morning.
Yep.
That just sounds untoward. It's like, what, do you pay them to vote for you, or you pay them to what? What are they being paid for? Isn't that illegal, wouldn't you think?
Also, Bloomberg, who has the most money, I mean, Joe Biden doesn't have a lot of money. I think Bernie has a respectable amount of money and support. And, of course, Michael Bloomberg is just a money pit. And he had gotten a lot of support from politicians in certain states, mayors, had come out, and he had given them campaign donations. So, yeah, I think it's very shifty. Imagine if you're a Democrat and you're a Bernie supporter. I know that's hard, but just imagine if you watch this happening and you see that there is a, you know, substantial amount of support for your candidate, and all of these corrupt things are happening around you, superdelegates, some rich guys paying off people. I don't know how you as Democrat voter can have faith in the system to, you know, be fair. And when that happens, that's when people take their ball and go home, right? They leave the party. Or they get violent. I mean, that's how civil, you know, once the institutions are crumbled, then people just, it goes back to the state of nature and everyone becomes kind of like an animal. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's weird, but the media was desperate to prop up this, I called it this morning when I was writing about this, Joe-mentum, right? This big Joe-mentum, Amy's out, Pete Buttigieg is out, Beto's supporting, you know, oh, it's Joe, he's the hero. The media's right there too. I mean, they know Bernie will have a problem in the general election more than Biden will. So it's like a gift in kind to the campaign, really.
Yeah. Let me ask you, there's so much to talk about, Liz, but I do want to, voter turnout into Virginia nearly doubled from 2016. Now this, I'm assuming it's Democrats. It's probably not much to do with Republicans. What do you think that means to the 2020 election?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of turnout. But as of today, like right now, having been where we are in the election process, I think that there is very strong sentiment in this country to get rid of Donald Trump at any cost. After 3.5 years of gaslighting by the media and disinformation, people really think this guy's the most dangerous person, you've heard Bernie say that, ever to walk the face of the earth and run our country, and they're in imminent danger. And so, yeah, I think people are turning out. Now, what could happen is Joe Biden's a real wild card, because I'm going to assume he's going to get the nomination, because unless Bernie has the numbers, Joe's going to get it. But the problem with Joe Biden is he doesn't seem well. So there's no telling what kind of gaffe he is going to have that's going to make people very nervous about and tamper that enthusiasm. So right now, people are riding high. Joe's a winner. Yay, Joe. But as soon as the reality sets in, we'll see. I mean, maybe Joe's going to run a campaign like Hillary Clinton did, where he makes almost no appearances, and everything is extremely scripted, lest he, you know, I don't know, he may not collapse like Hillary Clinton did, but he doesn't seem to remember the Constitution. He doesn't know what state he's in. Mistook his wife for his sister yesterday. I don't know.
it's wild. Okay, one last fun thing, or interesting, shall I say. James Comey yesterday tweeted that he was going to be supporting Joe Biden. He said a lot of other things, but then the endorsement was rejected by Andrew Bates, who's the campaign manager. Just your thoughts about that.
I thought it was kind of funny. You know, Comey has a much greater sense of himself than everybody else does. I mean, this guy really has no natural constituency. He's just useful for the never-Trumpers, but at the end of the day, having Comey support your candidate is going to drive Republicans out to the polls all the more. So.
Yeah, I think so, too. It was really pretty funny incident at James Comey's expense, but pretty funny. All right, well, Liz, we're going to put your latest article, whatever that may be, about, what is the name of it?
Oh, it's my morning briefing. So it's just called, I close my tab. It's like Sleepy Joe Biden Surprises on Super Tuesday.
Okay,
swampy,
well then we're going to...
Swampy Joe Biden, sorry.
Liz is a great writer, and she has great insight. That's why I love talking to her. So we're going to put a link to that, her morning. And by the way, she writes it every morning, and it's always filled with very interesting, insightful stuff. Liz, show. Thank you for joining me this morning. We'll talk to you soon. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You will know them by their fruits. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Tom Steyer, Amy Klobuchar, and Pete Buttigieg have all dropped out of the Democrat presidential primary. Klobuchar and Petey Pete have endorsed Joe Biden. The message is clear. Operation Stop Bernie Sanders is in full sway within the Democrat Party. They have fed the socialist Frankenstein, using him to inject open and unabashed Marxism into the American political mainstream, but the monster they've created has consumed them. The Democrats fear the down-ballot carnage that will ensue from a Bernie presidential nomination. They object to him personally as the Marxist standard bearer because his love for communist dictators is too overt, but they embrace his ideas.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
When life impacts you, when you are pressured, what comes out of your mouth? What happens when somebody cuts you off in traffic? What comes out?
Blessings and honor, oh God.
Or does something else come out? The Bible tells us out of the abundance of the heart is what comes out of our mouth. What is coming out of our mouth? And the more important question, what is it that's in our hearts?
Tune in to the Hamilton Quarter, weekday afternoons at 5 Central on American Family Radio.
American Family Radio newscasts are now available as a podcast.
I'm Rusty Pugh.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
Didn't catch the full story? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Chris Woodward.
I'm Chad Groening.
Didn't have the radio on at the top of the hour? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Charlie Bunch.
And I'm Fred Jackson.
Get accurate news from a Christian perspective whenever you want it with the American Family News podcast. You can also sign up for our daily news brief. Visit onenewsnow.com.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Environmentalists want us to believe that there is such a thing as clean, renewable energy. There isn't. Every form of energy generation involves an impact on the environment, and clean energy produces more of it than fossil fuel energy. To produce just 1,000-pound electric car battery requires digging up, moving, and processing 500,000 pounds of raw materials. But by burning gasoline, you can deliver the same number of vehicle miles at one-tenth of the total tonnage. To produce just one wind turbine requires 900 tons of steel, 2,500 tons of concrete, and 45 tons of plastic that cannot be recycled and has to be dumped in landfills. Clean energy is more destructive to the environment than the abundant fuel God has stored up for us in the ground. Gentlemen, start your engines.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Two tectonic shifts occurred yesterday in the Middle East, one good, one not. In Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu finally appears to have won the victory that had eluded him in two previous parliamentary elections. If so, he may be able to cobble together at last the coherent governing coalition Israel needs now more than ever. Turkish dictator Recep Tayyip Erdogan chose this moment to precipitate a new refugee crisis in Europe. He refused to accept a further billion euro bribe from the European Union aimed at staving off another invasion by perhaps millions more illegal immigrants from Sharia supremacist nations. Erdogan may be calculating that this gambit will distract his people's attention from the bloody setbacks Russia and its Syrian puppet regime have lately dealt Turkey. The episode certainly demonstrates that unlike Netanyahu's Israel, under its would-be caliph, Turkey's an ally no more. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
And really quickly, just curious to get your response to hearing that Bernie Sanders said that if he makes it to the convention with the most pledged delegates, that he should be the nominee. That's quite a bit of a change in his stance from 2016. Your reaction?
Well, my reaction is let's follow the rules. We've got rules. We had rules last time, and we have rules this time. And I think it's always a good idea to follow the rules. Everybody knew what they were when you got into it.
In the campaign, in the documentary, you talk about his campaign from 2016, and you call it, quote, just baloney, and I feel so bad that people got sucked into it. Do you still feel that way now?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, that was my authentic opinion then. It's my authentic opinion now. You know, here's one of the saddest things happening right now. The House of Representatives under Democratic leadership has passed 400 bills on really important issues.
I want you to hear that was Hillary Clinton on Good Morning America. And she's talking about Bernie Sanders and laughing because he did, after they took the nomination away from him, according as Liz reminded us to the email that were exposed through WikiLeaks, they did everything they could to keep the nomination from him. He agreed to certain changes. And that's why Hillary was laughing, kind of mocking him. Well, that's agreed to the rules. You knew what the rules were before you got in the game. That means that I'm sure she's right in the thick of trying to take this nomination away from Bernie Sanders. Again, not that I'm sad about Bernie Sanders not being getting the nomination. Part of me, of course, is encouraged that people are rising up and saying, no, that's too far. I'm grateful for that. But I'm not grateful that the Democrats are so corrupt that they are trying to buy superdelegates and steal. There should be open and free elections. And so they don't believe in that, I don't think. And by the way, speaking of Hillary Clinton, there's lots of other news that I want to get into here. Okay, so in the last segment of the show today, I want to bring you up to snuff on some things that are happening while all of these elections are the talk of the town. Judicial Watch has won a major court battle over Hillary Clinton's, it has to do with her email, but other things. You may recall that the FBI did a really ridiculous sham so-called interview with Hillary Clinton. They didn't even put her under oath. They brought her in on a Saturday. I think she stayed 2 hours. Her aide, Cheryl Mills, and I don't recall the other girl's name, they were allowed to keep their laptops. It was just really embarrassing. And after seeing FBI Lovebirds at CPAC, produced by Ann and Phila McClear, which was the text messages and email back and forth between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, it just reminded me in new ways what strong supporters of Hillary Clinton they were. And they were the ones in charge with investigating her. It is so corrupt. It is so corrupt. So Judicial Watch has just won the court demanding that Hillary Clinton and Cheryl Mills sit for depositions on these issues. Before Mrs. Clinton was allowed to, guess what, under James Comey, answer in writing. Answer a few questions in writing. That was as serious as it got for her. And so now they're going to depose her, and everything she says, of course, will be under oath. And same thing with Cheryl Mills. So that is really a great victory, and we'll see what happens with that. On a lighter note, President Donald Trump has donated his fourth quarter salary. He donates his salary every quarter, this time to Health and Human Services, to fight the coronavirus. And that's something people just don't even stop to think about, the fact that he's working for nothing. And you can bet that his businesses are not thriving right now, with him not overseeing them, and with his daughter caught up being in the White House also, and Jared, the two sons are running it. But he's so restricted, and everyone's watching everything he does. I doubt it's probably stagnant growth for the Trump organization right now. I'm just guessing. I don't know. But he's even, donating his salary. It's amazing. And by the way, the president renominated John Ratcliffe, Congressman John Ratcliffe from Texas, to be director of national intelligence. That is just fantastic. Remember, he nominated John about 4 or 5 months ago, and John stepped down because even members of the Republican Party started complaining that John wasn't qualified because they didn't want him in there. And Jim Jordan is kind of unlocking the mystery of that. What we have not talked about, but we will at greater length, is that the FISA renewal, the whole FISA program, which started back in the mid-70s, and it was to allow our intelligence agencies, especially the FBI, to surveil people if there was some sort of thought that there was a danger. And it was kind of an exception to the rule. You didn't have to get a warrant. You went into the FISA court secretly, and if someone you suspected of terrorism or undermining the United States, you could get a warrant. But the stuff in your application had to be true. That's how one of the reasons the FISA process broke down is because the FBI started lying about what was in those. They lied about what they presented to the court. And the court seemed willingly to go along with it. It seems like the court got corrupted too. And so something needs to be done about FISA. And I would hasten to say the sad news is Lindsey Graham, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, has done nothing. It is his job to hold hearings and try to sort that out. And the reauthorization comes up March 15th, and he's done nothing so far. So those of you from South Carolina need to call Lindsey Graham's office and ask him to hold hearings on FISA. For heaven's sake, after all of the talk that he's done about the corruption of FISA, that's the least he can do as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. If he puts his mind to it, he's able to do some very good things. But I find that he's just not, you can't count on him. And at least right now, we have not been able to count on him on that. So Jim Jordan is saying the reason that Ratcliffe is so controversial is that Democrats are scared of his pick as intelligence chief because he will probably clean out FISA. I would maintain that senators on the Intelligence Committee are equally scared because they've been up to no good. I think that's going to be interesting. The president appointed the first African-American to serve as the head of the United States Air Force. His name is General Charles C.Q. Brown. He's going to be the top general. He's currently head of the Pacific Air Forces. He'll be the 22nd Air Force Chief of Staff. And so first African-American military service chief, and that will be for the Air Force. I told you there's lots of news. The other thing, I should play this story. No, actually, this is not a story. This is a video that I watched. It shows this is like a drugstore, and these two young black people, they look like girls to me a little bit. Maybe one is a boy. I don't know. And they have a mask over their face. San Francisco has decided not to punish any kind of theft, I believe, under $1,000. And let me just hasten to remind you, I'd actually forgotten, a friend reminded me, that Chesa Bodine is the new attorney general in San Francisco, our prosecutor, head prosecutor, whatever, goes by whatever name. And Chesa Bodine was the son whose mother was in the Weather Underground. She spent tons of time in prison, and Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers actually raised Chesa Bodine. So he's the new prosecutor, the chief guy in San Francisco, and now they are not prosecuting any crimes under $1,000. So what happened? Well, in this store, which again I think is probably a drugstore, it looks to me like it, they are in there with huge bags just emptying the shelves into their bags. And people are running around saying, call the police, call the police. But the police are not going to come because they're not going to prosecute any theft under $1,000. So this is, you know, criminal justice reform on steroids. And this is what the left, like Bernie Sanders, when he talks about criminal justice reform, that's what they're talking about. Is depenalizing any kind of crime, letting people out of jail. I'm not saying no one should get out, and I'm not saying we shouldn't reexamine our policies, our drug policies, but I'm saying that the left takes it this far. It's very dangerous for all of us. Devin Nunes, he has so much courage. God bless Devin Nunes. He sued the Washington Post for $250 million over a story on a Russian intelligence briefing. Remember, Devin used to be in charge of the House Intelligence Committee before the 2016 upset in which Adam Schiff became the chairman. So this is what it says about this lawsuit. Damages against the Washington Post and intelligence reporter Shane Harris, alleging that a story from the paper related to a classified House Intelligence Committee briefing on Russian interference amounted to defamation. This action arises out of a Washington Post hit piece that was manufactured out of whole cloth. Billionaire Jeff Bezos purchased the Washington Post in 2013 for the purpose of using Washington Post's mighty pen to influence federal elections. Bezos' Washington Post heavily promoted the Russian collusion hoax between 2017 and 2019, in spite of the fact that there was no evidence that any member of the Trump campaign colluded with any Russian to influence the 2016 presidential election. This is 2020. As this case illustrates, Bezos and his printing press remain desperate to defame the president of the United States and his allies in Congress. This defamation must end. And that's the way the part of it reads, this lawsuit against the Washington Post from Devin Nunes. God bless Devin Nunes, honestly. And then another story. I'll just mention this one. The Supreme Court has agreed to review a challenge that came out of Texas, but it represents several states, over whether Obamacare is not unconstitutional now. And the reason is because the whole Affordable Care Act was made constitutional by John Roberts' magic wand, claiming that the tax forcing you to buy it, when he decided, John Roberts, that it should be called a tax, the statute didn't say that, magically Obamacare became the law of the land. So the president, as in Trump, then came in and took away that penalty, the penalty for that you got in your taxes if you did not buy Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act coverage. So he took away the mandate, and so then attorneys general, and by the way, led by our good friend Ken Cuccinelli, started this, and several states joined on. It ended up Texas was the lead state in this, so now the Supreme Court has agreed to hear it. It looks like it won't be heard until right before the 2020 election or right after it. Not sure, but that's a very big deal. And speaking of Ken Cuccinelli, a federal court, a judge, has ordered that Cuccinelli has to leave his job because he was illegally placed in his position as principal deputy of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. Turns out this is a lawsuit by Democracy Forward Foundation, which is code word for the left. They always forward is one of their mottos. Washington-based legal services organization created Trump's first year in office. They sued in September over Cuccinelli-pushed policies. They like to see all the policies under Ken Cuccinelli as a acting principal deputy at USCIS be overturned. That's what they're counting on. A U.S. federal district judge ruled in their favor. But Ken basically said he's not going to leave his post. What happened is not illegal, and those policies will stay in place. They're going to walk this up to the other courts. Ken is such a fighter, and he's got great ideas, actually, to save this country. All right. We know that I think it's 9 people now in Washington state have died from coronavirus. It's in one, for the most part, most of them have died in an old folks home, one facility. And we don't really know what the story is there. But right by contrast, the CDC has issued stats on the flu. 32 million Americans are ill with flu this season. There have been 18,000 deaths just this season. Did you know that? 18,000 deaths from regular flu. Coronavirus, I think it's up to 9. I believe 9 is the total that I read this morning. That is just that just puts it in perspective, doesn't it? 32 million Americans are ill with the flu and 18,000 deaths so far. So that should put your mind at ease. And that reminds me, on a personal note, I actually have the flu. I went to the doctor yesterday. No, it's not the coronavirus, but I'm one of those 32 million who's been affected by the flu. So I feel good in the mornings and then don't feel so good later in the day. Actually feel quite sick, but I'm grateful that in the morning I can talk to you. Well, it's Super Tuesday. Yesterday, it's really interesting, and there is a lot more news going on that I hope we can get to. There are a lot of findings, even more coming out about Russiagate and all those things about General Flynn, and I just haven't had a chance to update you on any of that because we've been talking about all of these elections. The Supreme Court is also eyeing a presidential power, which allows the president to fire people who are heads of so-called independent agencies. The president fired the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau head and put in place someone that he, I think it was Mick Mulvaney, believe so. But it runs up against a rule that took place when Franklin Roosevelt tried to fire William Humphrey, one of 5 commissioners at the Federal Trade Commission, and the Congress overruled him. So it's called the Humphrey Rule. So those rules are going to come up against each other. But we know that 5 of the Supreme Court justices have spoken about this attempt by agencies to take away executive power. And they've been pretty clear that they think that the executive has the power over these agencies. So that's going to go to the court, and that's going to be important because one of the problems is the president has not been able to fire people that should actually be taken away who do not agree with his policies and are undermining his ability to move forward. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.